Welcome to 143 Pixels. I'm Bill, and we're here to talk about games we love. Each episode, I bring a friend, and that friend brings a game. This week, my friend is TV's Travis, and the game that he brought is Sam and Max Hit the Road. I met Travis through America's Next Top Podcaster. If this is the first episode of the show that you're listening to, I was a contestant on this show called America's Next Top Podcaster, which was a weird amalgamation of a podcast and it was a podcast about podcasting, and it was also a game show and also a reality show created by Brian Ibbett, who was also on this season of 143 Pixels. And I was a contestant on there in season one, and TV's Travis was a contestant on that show in season two. We were on the community Discord for that show, and Travis reached out and said, "Hey man, do you want to come on my show, which is called Wait You Haven't Seen," where each episode of that, he has somebody come on and they talk about a game that one or both of them have never seen. We ended up talking about Nicolas Cage's Pay the Ghost, which we both really liked but felt like it was, you know, not the most memorable movie. So, you know, if you're interested in hearing more stuff from TV's Travis, make sure that you subscribe to his podcast, Wait You Haven't Seen. Obviously, check out America's Next Top Podcaster. Start with season one and then move on to season two so that you can hear both myself and Travis compete. And Travis is just a super, super nice guy. And I'm always looking for an excuse to talk to somebody about movies and stuff like that. So I was excited that he had me on his show. And our conversation was really, really easy. So I was like, well, I got to have Travis on this show. And he ended up picking Sam and Max Hit the Road, which I'll tell you a little bit about in a bit. In the interview, we end up talking about a whole bunch of stuff, like figuring out puzzles that were sometimes just way too hard. That's the kind of game the kind of issues that I always had with point-and-click adventures. Playing adventure games with friends, that's like a thing that doesn't really happen anymore. We find out his favorite quotes from the games and, you know, his comparison of the voice acting in the original Sam & Max games to the voice acting in the newer Sam & Max games. We talked about the difference of 2D games, 2D point and click adventure games versus 3D point and click adventure games, and how like his preference and why he has a preference for one versus the other. We talked about how pixel hunting kind of turns into a crutch for bad game design, and we also talked about video game comfort food. There are minor spoilers in this, but we're talking about a game from 1993, so I think it's probably okay. But I'm excited to have you guys listen to this because, you know, Travis and I, we had a really great conversation. I think you're really going to like it. All right. Now that I've told you about Travis, my guest, I'm going to tell you all about Sam and Max Hit the Road.
One has four legs, 63 teeth, long fluffy ears, and a callous disregard for private property. Meet Sam and Max, freelance police. If you play only one hysterical highway adventure game this year, make it Sam and Max Hit the Road, coming this fall.
Sam and Max Hit the Road came out back in 1993. It is a side view 2D scrolling point-and-click adventure published and developed by LucasArts. It was originally conceived by Steve Purcell as a comic strip, which then ended up getting turned into a game later on, mostly out of a necessity for something to practice on. Let's take a look at the back of the box. It says, "Yikes. Grab your nightstick, squeal like a siren, and hit the road with Sam and Max, freelance police, as they attempt to crack their toughest case. Sam and Max, a hyperkinetic rabbity thing, are hot on the trail of a runaway carnival Bigfoot across America's quirky underbelly in this deranged animated adventure. Help our frightening, furry flatfoots find the fugitive freak. Do it now. I take it Steve Purcell is a huge fan of alliteration just by reading the back of the box there. Let's talk about reception. You know, back in 1994, it was nominated for an Annie Award for the best animated CD-ROM. Unfortunately, it did not win. That ended up going to Star Wars Rebel Assault, which I did play, and I really did like that game. PC Gamer US said that Sam & Max is the eighth best computer game ever back in 1994. They wrote, "It's pretty tough to describe just how good, how professional, and entertaining Sam and Max really is." Computer and Gaming World said that the gameplay itself is solid. LucasArts has renovated that scum engine by removing the inventory and command icons from the screen, allowing the whole space to be occupied by the characters to be drawn in large and in detail. This, plus the elimination of the interface frame surrounding the graphics, helps break down the barrier between the player and the action. It's one more step, and not a negligible one, toward allowing players to play a cartoon. So let's take a second and talk about the Scum engine. Basically, this was LucasArts' way of giving you the way that they made these games. And in the older version of the Scum engine, what you would do is you would select a verb from a list at the bottom of the screen by clicking on them and then clicking on something in the game. With Sam and Max, using version 6 of the Scum engine, all you had to do is right click and it would keep changing and cycling through all of the verb functions, which meant that you didn't have to have a list of things that you could do on the bottom, so you could use up the entire screen for the actual game. According to Steve Purcell, this cleared the space to expand on the excellent backgrounds and also made interaction in the game a whole lot quicker, so that you're not moving the mouse back and forth and back and forth. You just move the mouse to what you want to look at, right click a few times, and then click the thing that you actually want to do. The conversation trees were also affected by this. Michael Stemmel, he said, "Let's get rid of text-based selection menu that was used in the previous adventure games from LucasArts and instead use icons representing topics of discussion." And it's pretty hilarious that like one of the things that they do, and Travis tells us about this, is that they would use the symbol of a duck for a non sequitur, which is really weird. Why did they do this? They did this because nothing would kill a joke worse than reading it before you got to hear it, which is kind of brilliant. They allowed this allowed the players to hear the jokes instead of read them, and I think that that's very, very awesome. So you've heard all about the game. Let's go ahead and get to my interview with Travis, and he's going to tell us why Sam and Max Hit the Road is one of his favorite games of all time.
Friends, we've only gone out together 3 times, and already you're telling me you just want to be friends? You never gave me a chance, and for that, you'll fry like a pork sausage.
It's not that I don't like you, it's just that, well, you're too nice a guy, I guess. I think I'd rather go out with someone more unpredictable.
Hello.
This doesn't look like the Lincoln Tunnel, Sam.
Looks to me like a marginally volatile hostage situation, Max.
Yeah, so instead of the DMV, we have the Secretary of State, which is where we do driver's licenses and cars and recreational vehicles and other things like that. But it's essentially the same thing. But the problem is it's by appointment only. It's a 40-minute round trip from my house, and I've had to use my lunch break the last 3 days to do it because every time I go, of course, I'm missing something or whatever, and it's just frustrating.
Oh,
between
man.
Between my bank... The bank that I have the Jeep loan in and then the DMV, it's like, just figure it out. So
that sounds
terrible.
It's
been wearing me out. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Well, I'm spending all that time on the road has probably given you some time to think about the game that you chose, which is Sam and Max Hit the Road. My first question is always the same. It's of all of the games that you could have chosen, why did you pick Sam and Max Hit the Road?
You know, So I love point-and-click adventure games. They're just a fun game style for me to just kind of relax, sit back, and play. This particular one just struck a chord with me. It's got the right mix of like this zany humor and kind of absurdism to it, as well as it's a fun game. The puzzles were challenging for me when the game came out in like 93, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I played it shortly thereafter. So for me, it was like the puzzles were the right mix of challenging, but not so much that I just threw the game down and quit playing it. But it also has replayability. I just enjoy everything. Plus the characters, I read some of the comics that it was based on. They had a short-lived Saturday morning cartoon that was based on the same property that I loved.
I did not know that part.
Yeah, there was Sam and Max Freelance Police. It was on... I guess it wasn't Saturday morning. It was like the Fox afternoon.
Okay.
And I remember when that debuted. So I watched that. And then I've played some of the recent Telltale, did a bunch of Sam and Max games a few years ago. So I just love the characters and it's fun for me. So yeah, this one holds a real special place in my heart.
Were you already like a big fan of the LucasArts games?
Yeah. Yeah. So right around the time this game had come out, maybe a year later, LucasArts put out this LucasArts Archive, and it was a six-pack of games. And it had, they were all on CD-ROMs. It had Sam and Max Hit the Road. It had Day of the Tentacle. It had Full Throttle, The Dig, and there was something else. I'm
probably
trying to
Indiana
now,
Jones and the Fate of Atlantis?
That's the one, yes.
Okay.
And I got that for Christmas. And the computer I had at the time was, I believe, a 386. And... it would play all the games except Sam and Max. It would play, but it was like it was playing it in slow-mo. It was weird.
Right,
because so
this was on like the updated SCUM engine. So yes. Like it needed a little more horsepower.
Yep. So I had played Indiana Jones. I had played Day of the Tentacle. Loved them. Go to play this. It's playing it in slow-mo. Then a friend of mine who had a better computer, I would take it over to his house and we would play it together. So my first playthrough was with one of my best friends. And we would just like every week or every 2 weeks, we'd get together and we'd play a little bit more. And we, you know, there was one spot we got stuck on. We were stuck there for like 2 weeks. We couldn't seem to get past it. But yeah, it holds a lot of great memories for me from that whole pack. I remember all those games and I love going back and playing all of them. This is my favorite of those.
I feel like... Like, I never got into point-and-click adventure games very much. I always, every time I see a point-and-click adventure game, I look at it and I say to myself, all right, this looks awesome. You're going to love this. And then when I play it, I get to a puzzle, and it's not that the puzzle is too hard. It's that my way of thinking is so different than the mm-hmm. designer's way of thinking that, like, it's like I can't figure out the one stupid thing that I need to figure out in order to progress. And I get frustrated and stop. So of all of those games that you listed off, the only point and click adventure that I really played of those was Indiana Jones. And that was really only because I loved, like growing up in the 80s, I loved Indiana Jones. So being able to play an Indiana Jones game was really, really cool. I always feel like I missed out big time on games like Day of the Tentacle and of course Sam and Max. So go ahead.
And you're not wrong. They all have that one puzzle. In Sam and Max Hit the Road, I can tell you which one it was for me. And it was, there is a an area of the game where you go to, so the game itself is just like, I've tried describing it to people before and they start looking at me like I have three heads because it's just out there. I'm like, so you play as a 6 foot tall anthropomorphic dog who's wearing a suit and a fedora named Sam, and his, as they describe it in the game, hyperkinetic rabbity thing is Max, and they're freelance police, which basically means they can do whatever they want. And they're contracted by a pair of conjoined twins that run a freak show at a circus to find their star attraction, which is a Bigfoot who's been melted out of his block of ice, and Bigfoot's girlfriend, Trixie, the giraffe neck girl from Scranton. That's the plot of the game. You're trying to find them.
Okay. That sounds pretty crazy. I can understand why people might look at you a little odd if you're trying to describe this game to them.
Yeah, if I can get to that point in describing the game and they haven't left yet, then I've got them hooked and I can kind of get them to at least check out the game some more. But there's a point in the game where you're at a former, I think it was a mini golf course that got flooded in Florida. So now it's a driving range. It's called Gator Golf.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Max is caught in a dunk tank on the other end of the driving range. And you have to figure out how to get across the driving range.
Now, Max is the rabbit thing, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
Max is the rabbit guy. So he's been captured. He's been put in the dunk tank. You have to get across to get him out. There's a driving range. You've got a bucket of golf balls, a golf club, and somewhere along the line, you've picked up, or hopefully you have, a bucket of fish.
Okay.
So you have to wrap your head around and use the fish to lure the gators into a line so you can walk across their back to get out to Max. It took so long to figure that part of it out, because you can use the golf balls and you'll hit the gators and they'll move, but they never move the way you want. But as soon as you start using the fish, you can like lure them in and get them into this line. It took us forever to figure it out, and then to get them all lined up, because you could get them lined partly, but if one was out of whack, you'd get partway across and then run back. Meanwhile, as all this is going on, Max is sitting out there yelling at you and like berating your ability to hit golf balls. Mm-hmm. So it took a while to do, but yeah, every one of these puzzle games, they always have that one puzzle that just makes you beat your head against a wall.
So this is a puzzle, the puzzle that you were working on over at your friend's house.
Yeah. Yep. It took us forever to get. And when we finally did, we felt like the greatest gamers in the history of mankind. You know, it was just the greatest achievement. And from that point on, the rest of the game felt easy. We figured it out somehow. We got that high from that, and we were able to just roll through the rest of it. So
it feels like this is something that I don't think really happens anymore. And that's, you know, I remember when I was younger, not Day of the Tentacle or Sam and Max or anything like that, but I remember going over to my friend's house and sitting down next to him at his computer and playing games like Police Quest or King's Quest or, you know, Leisure Suit Larry, and sitting next to somebody and puzzling out these games together. And I feel like that's something that doesn't happen anymore. Like, even if these point and click adventures were still being made at the rate that they used to, people wouldn't sit down at a computer next to each other and figure them out. Or do you think I'm wrong about that?
No, I don't think you are wrong, because I remember doing that with this game or with Maniac Mansion. You mentioned Space Quest and Police Quest and King's Quest were some of those too. Or one that I remember a lot of was Return to Zork.
Right, which is that the one that was all text? I know Zork was all text, but was Return to Zork also all text?
Return to Zork was the first one with visuals.
Oh, okay.
That was actually one of the earlier CD-ROM games. But no, I don't think you're wrong, because I've been doing streams of these old point-and-click adventures on my Twitch channel. And part of what makes them fun is when I get some people in my chat room, it creates that same sort of experience, almost like sitting down next to somebody at the computer, because mm-hmm. I've got people I can talk to and try to work my way through these puzzles. Games today just feel like they are designed either for an online co-op, like Battle Royale, or for one person to sit down and do. You don't get a lot of the, I'm going to sit with a friend and we're going to figure out these puzzles together. And I think that with a puzzle game, I think that is a very different experience to do it solo versus with somebody. Because I do a lot better in a puzzle game if I've got another person there that I can just rubber duck off of and talk to and try to figure it out, because they're going to see something that I don't.
Now, most of the time, every time I always tell everybody where they can find your stuff ahead of time. But since you brought up your Twitch channel, why don't we just remind everybody where they can go to join in on this puzzle, this adventure game madness?
Sure. It's twitch.tv/TVsTravis, TVS Travis.
Awesome.
And I do couple nights a week. I do I call it classic adventure game time.
Nice. Very, very cool. I think that that's something that probably doesn't happen very often. Now, back to Sam and Max. Did you play through the game multiple times?
Yeah, I have probably played fully through the game now maybe 4 or 5 times. I did the initial one at about, it would have been a year or two after the game came out. So probably 13 or 14 was the first time I played through it. And then it was actually when I started the classic adventure game time. That was the first game I played with Sam and Max.
Nice.
And went through and did it again. And then a couple of other times between in the intervening 20 years or so. I'll pick it up every so often and replay it, because it's just there's humor. There's quotes in the game that I quote to friends of mine now, and half of them get it, half of them don't. I don't care if they catch it or not, but there's just parts of this game that just made an indelible mark on me, and the humor to it is wonderful. Because it's based off of a comic, and this would have been in the era of LucasArts games with Tim Schafer, who went on to do Double Fine Entertainment. He was very prominent at this point. This was kind of at the tail end of Day of the Tentacle, and they were doing the Monkey Island games at the same time.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, so you had Tim Schafer, and this was one of the first ones that he really worked on. Steve Purcell, who created the comic, helped work on this game. So the art style is exactly like the comic book. And the type of humor they have is just, like, the game opens up with this really fun cutscene where there is a mad scientist, and he's got a woman strapped to a chair, and he's pointing a bunch of big lasers at her. And then suddenly Sam and Max just burst into the room. They subdue the guy, and then they leave. But the funny part about it is, A, their dialogue, but B, when they leave, they just leave her tied to the chair and take off. And then the opening credits roll. And it's never brought up again, ever. And they just have so much, like, absurd humor like that. And it kills me every time. I still laugh every time I play the game.
So you mentioned quotes that you will often throw down in front of people. What's your favorite quotes from the game?
Boy. When the chief calls them, which you never meet, it's just a voice on the phone.
Kind of like Inspector Gadget?
Yeah, a little bit like that. And Sam, first of all, they always fight over who's going to answer the phone, which is funny to me. But when Sam answers the phone, all you hear is his half of the conversation, and it ends with him telling off the guy on the phone and slamming it down. And Max looks at him and goes, "Who was that, another confused census taker?" You know, there's stuff like that, or there is, so the Siamese or conjoined twins that you deal with, the Cushman brothers, they're joined at the back.
Okay.
And so when they walk, they hop everywhere, but it was a modified version of the Scum Engine. You had mentioned that. Instead of having all the words at the bottom and you clicking like walk to, talk to, and all that, your icon, you could just right click and change the icon from like pick up, use. When you were in conversations, you'd have a question mark, an exclamation mark, a rubber duck, and an end. So it was, you could ask a question, you could make a statement, you could make some sort of a non sequitur, or you would end the conversation.
The non sequitur being the rubber duck?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the non sequiturs were always funny to me. Like, if you did the non sequitur to the conjoined twins, you would ask them where they buy clothes. And they're like, "Oh no, our skin is just naturally green and vinyl like." Like, it was weird stuff like that.
Okay.
But they also had, possibly my favorite side character was just this random dude. So you go to one of the locations you can go to is the largest ball of twine in the world. It's in Minnesota, and on top of it is a rotating restaurant. And up in that restaurant, there's just this guy sitting there using psychic powers to bend tools. No reason for it. He's just sitting there doing that. But every time you talk to him, he swears. Like every other word is a swear word, but it's beeped out. So the non sequitur with him was Sam would just, he would say percent sign and percent dollar sign.
Okay.
And then the guy would ask, what are you doing with a swear in the middle of it? And he goes, oh, I'm swearing in longhand. And like stuff like that just always makes me laugh. So I do that a lot.
I like that.
I'm swearing in longhand.
So you said you've played through it a whole bunch of times. I mean, older games were always very, very linear, and it's kind of tough to miss stuff, especially in a game like this. But do you feel like, you know, going through and playing it as an adult, that you were like, oh, I completely did not understand the context that they were going for in this game when I was a kid, or I missed this stuff when I was younger, and now I understand it better?
I would say there's a little bit of that, yes. I wouldn't call a ton of it, but there are some things. Like the villain of the game is a guy by the name of Conroy Bumpus, and he's sort of a weird amalgamation of like Elvis, because he has his own, his house is called Bumpusville instead of Graceland, and you have to go there at one point. He's a country and western singer, but he's got a Liverpoolian accent. So he's sort of this weird mix of like John Lennon and Elvis.
Okay.
But with a gigantic ego. And there's jokes at his place that I didn't catch before, like some of the titles of his songs, which now I can't remember, but they're all country and western songs. But just the titles of them, I'd be like, oh, okay, that's a, you know, it's a parody title of like this country song
or
this style of country song. So there's little things like that. And then the other thing that I picked up on more as an adult than I did the first time I played through was some of the characters are either caricatures or like a parody or a pastiche of different actors and comedians. So I'd be like, oh, okay, that character is sort of the Jimmy Stewart type.
Oh.
Like he kind of sounds like that, or this guy kind of sounds like this character. And with LucasArts games, there's always Star Wars Easter eggs too that you may or may not catch. So yeah, I would say there's a fair bit of that in this game for me.
You mentioned sounds like a whole bunch of times in that last thing that we were talking about. This was the first LucasArts game that was fully voice acted. Now I've never played it. What's the voice acting like in this game?
Yeah, so it was the first one that was fully voice acted, I think, when it came out, because I know Day of the Tentacle was mostly fully voice acted in a re-release. The initial release of it didn't have it, but the CD-ROM version did. The voice acting in this actually isn't that bad. So even when I play the newer Telltale games or I watch the cartoon that I mentioned, the voices that I still want to hear are these voices for Sam and Max and a couple of the other characters I think that show up too. But overall, better than a lot of older games that I've played. So I mentioned Return to Zork. I've played that a few times. That had a lot of voice acting done in all the cutscenes. That was bad. I've been playing one recently that I hadn't played before, Beneath a Steel Sky, which is another one of these older games, but it wasn't a LucasArts. That's got horrendous voice acting. This is pleasant to listen to, because I'm not sure if it's just that LucasArts had a bigger budget or what, but it seemed like the voice acting in this just felt like people actually playing characters instead of just getting, you know, one of the developers' cousins to come in and read some lines, or only having like a half a day to read all the lines for a character. It felt like they had time to really nail a lot of it.
That's awesome. So, you mentioned the newer Sam and Max games. I'm guessing that based on what you said, that they had to go with different voice actors for the newer games. Did it feel like the new actors were impersonating the older actors or from the older games, or did they actually just do their own character?
I feel like they're doing their own. The newer ones, I think part of what I enjoy the Telltale Sam and Max, but the three-dimensional aspect of it always kind of throws me off. I just want these games to always be 2D. For some reason, that just works better for me. The acting in it, I don't feel like they're impersonating this game so much as they are kind of... They took this game's version of Sam and Max, and they took the the cartoon version of them, and they just kind of went in the same direction. But it doesn't feel like a like an impersonation so much as, okay, that's actually what Max sounds like, and we're just going to go in that direction, because they all sound similar, but they're different. It's hard to explain exactly what it sounds like to me, just because these particular voices and Hit the Road are so etched in my memory. But I think the other ones, they don't feel like a cheap knockoff. They just feel like an evolution of the voice.
Okay, that makes sense. You mentioned a second ago 2D games versus 3D games. And of course, I can completely understand the... Do you think your preference of Sam and Max in 2D versus 3D, do you think that's more of a nostalgia kind of thing? Or do you think that is because it is actually better? And I know it's really tough to be able to tell that.
I want to say I think it's actually better, but I know a good portion of it is nostalgia. I think, too, because it's based off of a comic book, so it started out as a 2D property, and then it became a 2D game, and then it became a 2D show, that then to make the conversion to three-dimensional, it would be like having... There was an episode of The Simpsons where they went 3D for a short period in it, and it just looked weird. No matter how many times I've seen that episode, it never looks right, because you just... I always picture Homer Simpson in two dimensions,
right,
as a flat drawing. And suddenly to see him rendered 3D computer generated just doesn't feel right to me.
Was that the episode where he goes through the portal into the real world?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I specifically remember that episode. I haven't watched The Simpsons in years, but yeah, I specifically remember that. Sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
No. So I think that's a major part of it, is it's the combination of the nostalgia of, oh, this is what I remember playing and this is what I enjoy, because this game really is like video game comfort food for me. But it's also that kind of thing where it's just how I always have seen the characters, and then for that to suddenly change, it's sort of Clerks was a animated series for a short period of time, and it was well done.
Wait, hold on.
But
hold
it never
on.
Felt
Kevin Smith Clerks?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was actually a Saturday morning ABC cartoon for a little while.
Oh, I'm sorry. This can't be real. Really?
No, it really was. It absolutely 100% was, but it was fun, but it never felt quite right, because I just was so used to having seen all the Kevin Smith films to that point, and seeing Jay and Silent Bob, then see them animated was weird.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I can imagine like this. I've got this picture in my head of like these kids watching Clerks, the cartoon, and then mom takes them to Blockbuster and they see Clerks on the shelf and they're like, oh, look, it's Dante and whatever backwards hat guy's name is, the guy from the video store. Can we get we? Oh, yeah. You watch that every Saturday. Yes, of course. And then they take it home. Oh, no, that is. That's too funny.
Yeah, no, that would be. Ooh. Yeah, it ran. It ran for, I think, a season.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, no. Part of a season. Six entire episodes.
Well, so, that's a British
didn't last
season.
Very long. Yeah.
So are you know, back with this 2D versus 3D thing, are you, a Disney, I don't want to say the word snob in like the bad sense, but are you one of those guys that's like, look, the old Disney movies are better because they were hand-drawn, and the new Disney movies are all terrible because they are done in a computer or something?
No, not at all, actually, because one of my favorite Disney animated movies is The Emperor's New Groove, which is not a hand-drawn. That was it's a hand-drawn style, but it was definitely digitally done at the time. And then I love all the Pixar films too, but no, I don't think that just hand-drawn is the better way to go. I don't know. It's weird. It really depends on the material. Because I look at older animation and the hand-drawn stuff, whether it's old Don Bluth, old Disney, anything from Miyazaki, that's all hand-drawn, and it's amazing. But then you take something like, I just recently in the last year saw Titan AE for the first time. I'd never seen it.
Okay.
And I watched it for my show, and that's got a mixture of Don Bluth hand-drawn animation mixed in with the CG backgrounds, and actually worked really, really well. It was a weird mixture, but it's a sci-fi story, so it sort of fit. Mm-hmm. Because there were some characters that were fully CG and the other characters that are hand-drawn. It just worked. So I'm the kind of guy that likes a lot of stuff. It's hard for me to find things that I don't like, and usually I'm really nitpicking to find the flaws and stuff.
Yeah, we talked about that on your show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I like all of it, and I think that some of my issue with some of the like Sam and Max Telltale games, some of the early Telltale games have a very stiff quality to them.
Yeah,
that just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And especially after you've seen something that's really well animated and all that, to then have something come up that's that just feels stiff and like out of place will really throw you.
Do you feel like, I mean, okay, so, and this is complete, maybe it's completely out of left field here, but 2D versus 3D for a point and click adventure. Do you feel like a 2D game, because you're restricted to one view from something, it's much easier, it's much harder for you to miss things. Whereas when you're in a 3D view, you can look at things from different angles, and because you look at things from different angles, you might not notice something. It might not stand out as much as it would in a 2D, and maybe that's a reason why the 2D games are quote unquote better for you.
That's a really great point, and I think so, because when you have a two-dimensional space that you're working with, this flat plane to create a puzzle in, mm-hmm. you're going to create that puzzle very differently than you will if you have a three-dimensional cube or sphere to build that in. And if you just translate a 2D puzzle to a 3D space, it can be kind of boring, but it's so much easier to miss something because you get off kilter and suddenly you just don't see things the same way. I think, I think that's a part of it, is the restricted view of it. You can get more creative with the types of puzzles you can put into those,
mm-hmm.
because they don't just have to be visual. They can be word puzzles too.
Right.
That I think I like better. Now, having said that, there are a lot of 2D point and click adventures that end up being a pixel hunt, and those will drive you absolutely batty. I don't like that. That was one thing that LucasArts games especially seemed to not have too much of a problem with, was they didn't become pixel hunts.
And for the listener who is not well-versed in the way of point and click adventures, what exactly would you say is a pixel hunt? And I know that I used to do pixel hunting all the time when I played those games because I'm just bad at them.
So pixel hunting for me is when you just sit there with your mouse pointer and you're just scanning across the image, left and right, up and down, looking for that thing that's going to trigger the action or change the mouse pointer or somehow draw attention. And you end up in a space where you're just going pixel to pixel, trying to find that one or two little spots. And that was something that would happen in some of the earlier 3D adventure games too. I can remember playing the old Dracula games, or I'm trying to think. I think one of the Sherlock Holmes adventures too. And these were some of the earlier 3D, and they were nothing but pixel hunts. It was incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, I feel like pixel hunting is kind of like a crutch for bad design in that kind mm-hmm. of game.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think a well-designed game, you don't have to do that. I've been playing, I've now gone through 3 of the Monkey Island games. There's no pixel hunts in that. I mean, those games, all those LucasArts games were so well-designed, whether it's Monkey Island series, even going back and playing the original Maniac Mansion, you get very little of that, like, sitting in one screen hunting for the one thing to look at. It's like, if you can click on it, it probably has some sort of an interaction, even if it's just reading it and making a funny joke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about it. So
my problem is always like, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, and it allows for the art style to just be, you don't have to have these, like, here's your background and here's your foreground things that are moving. And they're very much two separate things. The way that they have, we're just like, you can basically, LucasArts games did this really well. Basically, everything is you can interact with in some way makes for just a better looking game too.
Oh yeah, I 100% agree with that. Is there anything about Sam and Max Hit the Road that you wish that they had changed or that you were not a fan of?
I wish they had made more of them, honestly.
I have news for you.
Oh?
Yes. So, dear listener, we are recording this on August 27th, and earlier today there was Gamescom, the opening day for Gamescom, and there was this two-hour thing with Jeff Keighley talking about all of the games that are coming out, and there was about a 15-second little blip where Sam and Max were there, and then they disappeared, so I think that we've got a new Sam and Max game coming.
Ooh, you have my attention.
Yeah, they didn't tell us much about it. They just said, they showed up on screen, Sam and Max, and I was like, oh, that's so funny because I'm going to talk to Travis about this later today. And then they disappeared, and I think Jeff Keighley said something along the lines of, we'll hear more about them later, or another day, or something like that. And I was like, oh, man, that's great. And I immediately grabbed my phone. And I texted one of my best friends in the world, Craig. He is a huge adventure game nerd. He like Maniac Mansion, Sam and Max, all of those games. Like, he adores those games and plays them over and over and over and over again. And so I sent him a message. I was like, dude, Sam and Max new, our new Sam and Max coming. And he texted me back, give me a link. And I was like, there's no link. It's already gone past. You're going to have to wait until we find out more. But
I can't wait. That's great, because I think as an adventure game, there's very little that I can say bad about it. I think it's got a great mix of puzzles. The humor just gets me every single time. There's a couple of fun little mini games. You can play a battleship style mini game that's called Car Bomb.
Okay.
And then they have another one that is just a almost like hood surfing with, I think it's Max on top of the car, and you're just dodging road signs. That one I didn't play as much as Car Bomb, but I just think that it's got this great mixture of, I would love, honestly, a remastered version of this if they could clean up the audio, because it's an old LucasArts game, so it was the old like Sound Blaster 16 era sound. Yeah. So some of it gets that real crunchy sound to it, and some of the lines sound better than others. But just taking and leave the graphics the same. Just, they did it with Day of the Tentacle a few years ago, actually. They went through and there was a special edition. It came out PC and I think PlayStation. I don't know if it was on Xbox or not. But that treatment to this game, I think, would be worth it. I think maybe the only reason that hasn't happened is that Telltale has the license for Sam and Max now.
Right. Well, and Telltale they're gone. So somebody,
yeah, that's right.
Somebody must have gotten the rights to it. Otherwise we wouldn't have seen anything at opening night live today. So
yeah, good point.
So I don't know who has the rights to it, but maybe we've got a new Sam and Max on the way. Do you feel like, I mean, for the most part, point-and-click adventures are dead. Like, those games don't get made much anymore. There are, of course, a few exceptions, things like Thimbleweed Park and stuff like that, which has come out recently. But, they don't get a whole lot of fanfare. And, you know, even the ones that did, you know, they were all being made by Telltale. And Telltale, like, they don't exist anymore. So do you think that Sam and Max, let's say that the Gamescom thing is real and that there's a new Sam and Max game coming next year or something, you think it's going to do okay? Or do you think, because it's a point and click adventure, that it's going to fall on its face, its rabbity face?
I want it to do well. It's hard to say. I played Thimbleweed Park. I don't know if you've looked at that one much, but that is an incredible game. That was Ron Gilbert, and other name that I can't think of now, that created Maniac Mansion, is who put out Thimbleweed Park. So it's got that exact same Maniac Mansion humor.
Right. And it's got Fox and Scully from the X-Files in it. Fox, Mulder and Scully, I mean.
Yeah, basically those types of characters. Right. It's got it's got so much going on, and it's got, you play as half a dozen different people throughout the game. And I want, that did okay. It didn't do great, but it did well enough to get a DLC made for it. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say. I think it'll do okay, because I think there's enough of a nostalgia factor for some of those old games, and something like Thimbleweed Park doing as well as it did helps it, because that shows that there's at least somewhat of a market. It's not that type of game, those point and click adventures are never going to take over again. It's just not the style of game that people want.
Yeah.
But if the interface is done right, and they make it available on mobile as well, especially something like an iPad or you know, even playing it on like a Surface Pro, where it's got that kind of touch interface, if they can get the interface right, I think it can do fairly well, because they're a great casual game, and that's what like iPad gaming is perfect for, that kind of just sit back and, you know, play through essentially what is an interactive story.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. That is the place that I would want to play a point-and-click adventure. I don't like sitting down at my computer and playing a point-and-click adventure, because I got to move my mouse around, and like I have carpal tunnel issues and stuff like that, and I use my computer too much as it is. Playing on an iPad would be great. I'll tell you what I hate, and this is probably the reason why I didn't play very much of Thimbleweed Park, outside of the fact that it's a point-and-click adventure, and I lose interest in point-and-click adventures incredibly fast. But the real reason that I probably didn't get too far into that game was because I played it on my Switch. I got it as a review copy, and like, it's just not a good interface to use a controller to play those kind of games. It never works the way that it should.
No, not at all. In fact, so it's amazing that I enjoy adventure games the way that I do, because my first ever experience playing any kind of a point-and-click adventure was the Maniac Mansion port on the NES.
Oh, my God.
And that is notoriously a terrible port, because you're taking a game that was based off of mouse maneuvering, and you're translating that to the NES controller. So you don't even have the luxury of the control stick that you have like on the Switch, that has just freedom of movement in any direction. This was, you had four directional movement, and that was painful to play, and I didn't enjoy it. And then somebody had it on their PC, and I played it again, and I realized, oh, that's how this game is supposed to be played. And then I got that LucasArts archive pack probably a couple of years later, and it just opened me up to like, oh, okay, this is how these games are supposed to be played. And I never looked back. So you're right. You know, I was going to mention the Switch as being something that I could see this coming out on, but that's not a good interface for this style of game. You have to change. You could make some sort of an adventure game on the Switch, but it can't be the point and click style.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the Switch has a touchscreen. I just want to play with a controller if I'm playing a game on my Switch. So that maybe that's completely on me.
No, I get it. A controller interface on these types of games I never enjoy. Yeah. I have installed ScumVM on just about any platform it's available on, mm-hmm. to try and play some of these old games. And what I've noticed is that touch screens translate fairly well to them. So I think with some tweaking and some kind of modern design and dev work, I think you could make a really good point and click style adventure that runs on an iPad.
So you mentioned real quick the compilation that you got when you were a kid for Christmas. Did you ask for that? Did you say, Mom, Dad, this is the thing that I want, or did they surprise you with it?
They surprised me with it, and I still to this day don't even know how they thought of that. I think it was just my parents saw, oh, it's like six games in one package and it's on sale. I really think that's what it was, because that's how they were. They were going to try and get the most bang for the buck.
Yeah. Hey,
they saw multiple games and go for it. And you know what? Thanks, Mom and Dad, because it was awesome.
Yeah. And now you're, oh my gosh, my Google thing started listening to me and was trying to play some Tears for Fears music. I was going to have to pay for that in the podcast. My goodness, yes. So there you go, mom and dad. They put you on the path that you're on now by giving you a giant talking dog and a rabbit faced thing.
Looking for a Bigfoot.
Yeah, looking for a Bigfoot. Well, Travis, thanks so much for being on the show. I really do appreciate you coming on.
Well, hey, thanks for having me on. This was fun. I love this game, and talking about it is easy to do, but just old games like this in general, I just love talking about. So I was really thrilled when you invited me on.
Yeah. Listen, each episode, I finish out the show by asking my guest to close out the show saying the show's motto, which is resolution doesn't matter.
Well, I can get behind that because, guys, resolution doesn't matter.
The theme song for 143 Pixels is Through a Cardboard World by Tony Lays. You can find more of their music at tonylays.bandcamp.com. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, you can find it at Pixels143. And if you want to follow me, I'm at RunJumpStomp. This show is part of the Giant Size Team Up Network. For more information, head on over to gstu.net.